This is...
Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politrics.
Welcome to our first ever live edition of Hashtag Politrics on Wow, What a Week. We are coming to you from our Domboshaba mobile studio. Yes. We literally built a studio so that we can take the show on the road.
Yeah.
You know, some of our guests are so VIP, they've got a security detail like up their bums.
That we have to go to them.
That they always say, yeah, we don't know if we want to come to downtown Johannesburg. Then the building, there must be swept. Then we must bring in sniffer dogs. And we decided, okay, so we will build a studio so that some of our guests we can go to. But also because we own our own space, we can do the show whenever we want.
That's
we don't
the
have to book studio time. Yeah. If we decide we want to go live on a Saturday morning, like we decided today, we want to go live on a Saturday morning.
Like
so
you.
Apologies that you guys have been waiting. We're dealing with a couple of issues behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And I remember Ekeletso from my office, my manager was like, because we decided a couple of days ago, guys, we're going live on Saturday. She's like, guys, we need to plan it, and we're going too soon. I was like, dude, if we don't do it, we'll never do it.
I mean, you know, Fresh, when you told me that, no, we're doing it this week, I'm like, this guy, you don't have to sit down and have a meeting and plan it properly.
I am from a school of don't overthink things. Just get on with it.
But you know what's the only glitch about this whole thing?
Yeah.
Me waking up on Saturday morning.
Because Friday, you can't avoid.
I can't even wait for And I had to sit the whole evening yesterday looking at the topics and what happened this week. And,
yes,
and waking up, bruh, I know, no. I think the studio, because it's mobile, it must move to my garden.
No, we can park outside your yard.
Yeah, no.
So that we can literally just roots all say.
When it's time to walk
in. brush your teeth and walk in.
Yeah, no, that will work. This 8 o'clock downtown, all over. We are in the middle of the bush, actually.
Yeah.
Anyway, bro, thanks for this opportunity.
Yes, sir.
It actually feels weird that people are sitting there and they can, we know there's no planning, there's no Trevor cutting and chopping, you know, our jokes. So
you see, that's the only challenge with live. Live is live.
Yeah,
there's no retake. We can't. If you mess it up, you mess it up.
But it
also means when it's done, it's done. You see?
That's it, bruh.
Exactly. Anyway, let's start with what was a bill is now the Bella Act, right?
Yes, the Bella Act.
What are your thoughts on the Bella Act? And the fact that, you know, in the bigger scheme of things, looking at how President Ramaphosa played it, it's almost like he didn't want to rock the DA boat too much, because the two clauses that have been suspended for 3 months are the things the DA and AfriForum were complaining about.
Yeah.
Which for me almost smells like he's still appeasing them.
Well, Fresh, I think the president, there's two options. Some people say he's a good negotiator and he has given much, but much in a sense that 90 days, I mean, what is 3 months? 3 months, it's nothing. This bill, if the public knows, it has been in the pipeline for 10 years, bro. 10 full years.
And with the consultations that have been happening already, Botswana, what else can the DA and AfriForum and whoever else feels that we need to relook at these clauses, what else can be said in these 3 months that hasn't been said in the past 10 years?
What new points
are they going to bring?
Even if they have new points, we must always remember that it's the majority rule. That's how our democracy is.
Absolutely.
You sign up for democracy, the majority rules, and that's where we are. I don't think there'll be any significant change. Actually, I think 3 months will pass without any significant changes on the Bella Bill. I think it was very smart of President Ramaphosa to can actually give a leeway of these 3 months and put a time frame to it. To say, I'm giving you 3 months. Knowing that in the next 3 months, he'll keep them busy with many other things that are happening in the cabinet or in the country. But I just think it's very silly of the DA and AfriForum. It is actually a racial thing. If you look at it, the Bella Act intention is supposed to address the racial imbalances in schools, which include the language, the culture in there, and the access to the education system. We have seen a lot of people. I mean, one of the proponents of the Bill Act, it's the Premier of Gauteng, Banyaza Lesufi, having have been in education before as an MEC. And I remember 3 days before the president signed the bill into an act of parliament, which was last week Friday, he tweeted and he said, "Mr. President, for the sake of our children and the nation, can you sign off that bill to an act of parliament?" But I just think the Afrikaner people in South Africa, and it's also not whites generally, because there are whites who are English-speaking, Portuguese-speaking in South Africa, but it's the Afrikaner people who want to preserve. It's part of the AfriForum preservation of the Afrikanerdom. And the bill is not saying we are taking away from them what they are entitled to. It's simply saying open up for other people.
I was going to say, my understanding of the Bella Act is it's about let us accommodate other children without necessarily diluting what you're already doing.
Exactly.
I'll give you an example. There are schools, for instance, in KZN that are starting to have more non-Zulu speakers along the Mozambique border.
Exactly.
So how do you accommodate those children that either speak Portuguese or
even Bosichonga?
For instance, if you look in the Rustenburg area, it's a Botswana area, but there are many Xhosa children because of
the mining community
exactly. That must be accommodated. And no one is saying dilute Setswana sa your schools, but how do you make sure that your school is inclusive of other people? So for me, this is bigger than Afrikaans.
My only challenge with the Bella Act is the availability of resources, like infrastructure, space in schools and all that. I think the government knew that this act is in the pipeline, it's coming. They should have made provision. For example, an Afrikaner rural school somewhere in Pretoria East must now make space for other children who want to learn in English. So it means they will need extra classrooms, they will need extra teachers. And I don't think the Department of Basic Education is ready for that at the moment. They should have planned at least 5 years back.
Because you knew it was coming.
They knew it was coming, and they've been pushing it, especially the ANC's, the ruling party. They've been pushing for this act. But it's going to be delayed, the implementation, due to lack of resources. And I don't think the delay is going to be delayed by AfriForum. ACDP is one of the political parties that is very, high on this whole thing. And I think the ACDP is not only pushing it negatively on the basis of Section 3 and 4, which have been held back. They have a concern about the section of, children. I don't know why did that come into an education bill. Young kids, in order to try and avoid teenage pregnancies and all that, to come and say children at the age of 12. We spoke about it before. To say the controversy in South African legislation is that you have the constitution says the age of majority is 18 fresh.
Yes.
And then you say you can only consent. Imagine, this is where the madness is. The age of 18 is the age where you can consent. You are a full adult. It used to be 21. In the apartheid years, it was moved to 18. The only thing on earth or in this country that a teenager can consent to before 18 is sex. And for me, as a parent, that's worrying to say you can have a consented sexual intercourse at age 16. Why do they move it from 18 to 16? It doesn't make sense. But then it even goes further. And this is where the ACDP has a problem with the Bella Act, to say you can have a consented abortion as a girl at age 12. Sure. Now, you can't consent to have sex until age 16.
Absolutely.
So how did you get pregnant between age 12 and age 16? And you can go to a clinic, you can walk into a public hospital or clinic and have consented sex without a parent. And for me, that is my only concern.
No, consented termination.
Yes, consented termination. Mm-hmm. So without a parent. Now that's where I want to agree with the ACDP. The party of Reverend Mitchell, to say, but that's madness. You can't consent to having sex until 16, but you can consent to having sex. What is it going to do to our daughters? Mm. Understand? Well, who is impregnating these girls? And we are a country that is one of the leading, it's a very bad statement, but we are one of the leading countries with rape in the world. That's one. Two, We have a lot of teenage pregnancies. Mm. We have cases in this country where teachers at school has impregnated young girls. Sure. Now that teacher is going to give that girl some 200 rands and say, keep quiet, go to the clinic. Those are some of the things we have to manage as a nation. But the intention of the Bella Act is a very good intention to address the inequalities in our education system. Look, Fresh, somebody said to me, but Botsang, what if I don't want my kids to be part of that? We can just go and build our own private schools.
No, but does it not also regulate homeschooling?
It regulates homeschooling. You know, yeah. That's the answer I wanted to give, to say it is also going to regulate homeschooling. It's also going to... Look, private schools have been regulated in South Africa anyway.
Sure.
Look, it's going to take a lot of time, Fresh, for the act to be fully implemented. It's going to take a number of years because we have to deal with the mentality of the people than anything else.
Mm. Because our daughter, she's what, 15? She's we're homeschooling her, basically. Mm-hmm. Been homeschooling her for the last year. But she goes to a homeschooling college, though. So yes. It's parents who want to homeschool, but you still want the structure of a college.
Of a college,
so
yes.
So that class is like 5 to 6 children, for instance. So there's still socialization.
Interaction with other kids.
Interaction with other kids. But because you are... Your child is going at the rate they want to go at, or that they can go at. You'll find, for instance, she's supposed to matriculate in 2 years. Mm-hmm. She'll be done next year. But she'll be done next year because she's going at her pace.
Her pace, yeah. But there also other beauty about homeschooling or privately regulated schooling.
Sure.
Is that, you know, people perform at different times better.
Absolutely. And that's
it. There are people who perform better at night. Mm. You know, there are people who perform better in the morning. So it creates that atmosphere and that opportunity for kids. But yeah, let's hope that the AfriForum and the Democratic Alliance laments will fall off and the bill will be rolled out.
What are your thoughts on Minister Kwakhube snubbing the signing of the bill?
That's another thing. I think the DA is actually disingenuous towards the Government of National Unity, as they call it. It has happened 2 or 3 times now that they snubbed the president called to perform their duties.
But do you think she was wrapped on the knuckles? You know why? But because before the signing of the bill, she'd said, listen, right now I'm a South African minister, not a DA minister.
Yeah.
So if the bill is signed, and then I must implement.
She must run with it.
I must run with it and implement what needs to be implemented. 1-2-1-2, she's not at the signing.
Look, I think the statement before the signing of the bill, I think it was a day or that afternoon.
Because I think it got in trouble.
Yeah. It was going to go into trouble. She had to pronounce on it. Yeah. You understand? She's a custodian of that act of parliament at the moment.
Mm.
And I think that's a very smart diplomatic statement to be released. But the action, the conduct after for not being there when the president is signing this bill, for me, that's telling to say, how will a person stand up and say, I will implement this bill, but my political party that has deployed me is not pro that bill. It's going to be very difficult. So we are going to rely on the official, the deputy minister and the officials in that department. The other advantage that we are sitting with as a nation is that this bill, it may be in the custody of a national department of basic education, but you know that how education is structured. The provinces are responsible for rolling out government programs on education. So probably only in the Western Cape, they may derail or delay, but in all other provinces where the DA is not governing, I see them rolling it out, as intended. But it was very silly of the Minister of Basic Education not to attend.
Some people have even said she should be fired. I mean, do you think we are overreacting saying she should be fired?
Look, Fresh, President Ramaphosa can't fire anybody at the moment because it will rattle the GNU.
But besides,
look, we are what, almost 100 days into this administration, and the DA has, like I said, demonstrated more than once, I think 3 times, to say the things that they do not agree with, the things that they do not support, they will not form part of the ceremony and all that. But at the moment, being fired, I think we are too anxious, and I don't think the president is in a position to can do that.
And besides that, I mean, Minister Mantashe himself has snubbed a signing of a bill before.
Minister Mantashe has disappeared since the GNU. When last did you see Minister Mantashe on TV or addressing the media or what? Yeah. But we should also recall that Minister Mantashe is one of the members of the South African Communist Party that you know, it's got a dual membership. The Democratic Alliance and AfriForum, they don't want. He's been implicated into a lot of wrongdoings and corruption allegations. He's one of the people being mentioned in the Zondo Commission. So I don't think he is one of them. He has accepted this marriage, you know, this arrangement with the Democratic Alliance, but I don't think he's one of the people. He's showing by his silence, yes, by snubbing some activities, that he is not actually for the government of national unity, especially the coalition or the marriage with the Democratic Alliance.
Sure.
It's a very tough call. You know, I spoke to one of my friends who's a hardcore ANC member from KZN, and we're discussing the options that the ANC had. And I said, but you guys could have formed a minority government, or you could have gone with your breakaway parties, Umkhonto we Sizwe and EFF. And he was like, no, that was not an option. I said, then why didn't you form a minority government? Why did you go to bed with the DA?
Yes.
Funny enough, majority of the ANC people are saying to us, Fresh, they don't like this arrangement of the GNU, but they will have to live with it. I mean, if you don't like something, why do you take it? Why do you accept it? Sure. This demonstrates to me that there was never a democratic process within the African National Congress in forming the government with the Democratic Alliance. There was not. A decision was taken on the top. I don't know informed by what.
Sure.
People said it was by markets. In a normal society, in a socialist society, the markets feed the people.
Yeah.
Understand? In a capitalist society, the people feed the markets.
Sure.
And that's the situation we are sitting in.
Don't forget that we are live, guys. If you have any comments, any questions, you disagree, feel free to comment on the side. In fact, someone says, let's see if these guys are live. Say hi to Kagiso.
Hey guys, I must get used to this live thing. At least you have access. That will distract me. I'm glad I'm not reading the comments of the people.
Freddy Sikukune says, the same kid who's not allowed to vote, not to buy alcohol, but can be trusted with the responsibilities of an adult. Very illogical in my view, not properly thought through.
I agree with Freddy. It doesn't make sense. I know people who made that decision. I agree with Freddy. That and like I said, you are not allowed to make any decision until you are 18, except on sexual intercourse and termination of pregnancy and other nasty stuff. I think the ACDP has my support on that, and I agree with Freddy.
Someone else, Oreo, says, I hope they touch on the Juju interview.
The only issue then, the Juju interview, is what he said about Dr. Naledi Pandor. Well, he shocked me.
Or that she's implicated in VBS.
In the VBS.
She was so upset.
Juju must calm down a little bit. you know what is interesting on that one?
Yeah.
Actually, it was not even part of our topic today. It is that Naledi Pandor, Dr. Naledi Pandor, has asked for an apology from Juju. I want to see what Juju is going to do, because if he doesn't, she may take legal action. But South African politicians, especially those from the NZ, they should have known that whenever Julius Malema makes utterances, he probably has some sort of information lying around somewhere that he will come and back up. So
you're saying
where the smoke, there's fire. Look,
he doesn't just go.
Julius is very reckless with the tongue. Julius reckless the ANC. He's got informers in the ANC. But what I'm saying is that most of the things that Julius has alleged or spoke about in the past, they came out to be the truth. Understand? So I'm not saying this is true about Dr. Pandor, but why would he make such a reckless statement? It's so funny, Fresh. I was watching that interview with Clement, and he said that in the last minute of the interview, he closed the show, actually, the interview, with those utterances. But it's a wait-and-see situation.
I think it was a drop mic or throw a grenade and leave the room.
Exactly, that's what he did.
It kind of reminds me of what President Zuma did at Nasrec.
Exactly.
Where before walking off, it's like, there'll be free education.
But also, why? You know, one thing that Juju caught me off guard with in this one is why Naledi Pandor? I never thought there's any skirmishes between the two. You know, why would you wait until such a moment you can go for a retired, you know, politician that is held very high by many people in South Africa. So, yeah.
Before we move on to the interest rate cut that happened earlier, while we're still talking about the GNU and the relationship between the ANC and the DA, Mayor Celia Brink.
Yes, my mayor. My mayor.
Your mayor.
Yes.
Is under siege.
Yeah.
And there'll be a vote of no confidence that's been proposed for this coming week.
Yes.
And what are your thoughts on what's going on there, given that there is an agreement at national level between the ANC and the DA? But it seems like in Gauteng, the ANC are on some, yeah, we're happy for you, but.
Look, it's only in Gauteng, Fresh. If you look at it, and I spoke about it, actually, it was the weekend you were bereaving.
Yeah.
I spoke with Eugene about it to say it's only in Gauteng. Gauteng province led by Panyanza Lusuf has defied the national ANC. Maybe it's a strategy from the ANC. But I recall somebody from Action SA in Centurion, where I live, very close to the national leadership, said to me the DA has dared the ANC to do this in Tshwane, because that is their last rope they are hanging on in Gauteng. And they've dared, but what can the DA do after? Are they going to withdraw from the national arrangement due to the holding on of Tshwane? Look, I think Brink will go down. I think he will not come back after. I think the vote is on Wednesday or Thursday next week, and I don't think he will come back. But it's the nature of politics. So why are DA crybabies? They've been through this. They're becoming crybabies. They've been into power in Joburg, in Ekurhuleni, through the votes of the EFF, and now the Action 8. Now they're accusing, why did they believe another politician named Herman Mashaba, that he will not change the tune, that he will not turn against them. And I listened to Herman Mashaba, oh yeah, last night. It's so funny to be live because I can say last night now.
Yeah.
Herman Mashaba last night went on air and he said the DA betrayed, and they will issue a statement after the mayor has been removed, the mayor has been changed. Said they betrayed the agreement they have. We don't know what is it. We don't know how did they betray Action SA.
No, but Brahim and Mashaba are still the same person that said the reason we are pulling out of our cozy situation with the DA is because they're not delivering services anymore.
Yes.
But and I'll say this anecdotally. The people I know from different townships in Pretoria are not complaining about the DA. And are in fact saying we are seeing a difference.
Yeah.
We are seeing roads being improved or built.
The cleaning, we are seeing the removal of garbage. Yes, yes. Look, I'm a resident of Tshwane, and I should not be a better example because I live in a very privileged suburb.
Sure.
But I even heard majority of the people in the townships complaining since the GA has taken over. And but Fresh, this is politics. You know, a politician say something today, they change tomorrow and say a completely different thing.
Yes.
And Herman Mashaba, what I've realized with Action SA, I've always thought they are not in for position.
Sure.
But it's becoming clearer and clearer that they are in for positions. Look what they've done in Joburg.
Who doesn't want to eat?
You understand? Yeah, they are in for position. But also, it has also, I think, you know, dawned into Herman Mashaba's head that politics needs money. Understand? So if you've got executive positions like that of a mayor, Tshwane as a deputy mayor or of a speaker or what, there'll be resources for the organization to can run the organization and to prepare for upcoming local elections. And if you go for local elections, the votes are the majority of the people who are black people, who are township-based people. I think Herman Mashaba is thinking for the future.
Sure.
I think he is sitting there and saying local elections are coming in 3 years' time. And therefore, I need the votes of the people in the townships. And let me go and appease them and talk to them. Because like we have said, me and you before, South Africans still vote according to the color line.
Sure.
And South Africans still vote according to where you stay. Especially local government elections are going to be very interesting.
Absolutely. Dumisani Maseko says, guys, I'm here to hear something regarding unemployment by the GNU.
Look, you know that Dumisani is taking us to one of our topics for today that we have lined up. It looks like we don't need topics anymore. We'll rely on the viewers and followers.
Regarding
the immigration, the Minister of Home Affairs. If you go into that issue, It is too early, Fresh. In my opinion and view, it is too early to can say the GNU should have provided employment. I mean, it's 100 days. It's 3 months. Mm-hmm. It is too early. But the government plans have been there to create employment. They are talking of foreign direct investments. They are talking of job creation. It has been a talk.
Mm.
Chances of it happening, look, the economy is very bad. We are doing very bad economically as a country.
Mm.
The Minister of Home Affairs, and I don't know why is this being pushed by Minister of Home Affairs more than the Minister of Labor. The Home Affairs is making more noise about job creation and fighting foreign people employed in South Africa illegally or legally. But on the other hand, the Minister of Home Affairs has come and said he's going to create 11,000 jobs from foreigners, people with special skills, with qualifications and all that. I think the stimulation of the economy, and look, my basic economics knowledge or studies is telling me that the government is not stimulating Fresh. The government is not stimulating the economy enough to create permanent jobs. We have seen with Amapanyaza, we have seen, you know, or the Gauteng guards and all that. But the government is not doing much. We import quite a number of things that we are not even supposed to be importing. We can manufacture them. But also, I think the government needs to focus on that economic cluster where Home Affairs, labor, and small business. Lot of countries, if you look at the Asian tigers, if you look at Malaysia, you look at Singapore and all those countries, they build their economies due to small businesses. If we are going to focus on people getting jobs to be employed permanent, like, you know, historically we used to work and get a job and you're permanently employed, it doesn't work. They must stimulate the economy in a sense that they can do business. Why is government not doing business with small businesses?
Mm.
Why do they have to do with big companies? You go to government meetings.
Sure.
You find the water that is being served there. It's not from Mr. X or Mr. Zulu sitting on the corner, you know, manufacturing bottling water. It's still the Steiner, it's still the Bitvest and all those. They must do business with small business. Like, for example, I made one simple example in the past. Why is the government not washing government vehicles in the townships like Olivet, Houtbosch and Mamelodi and Soshanguve? Why don't they have a decision to say there's a car wash, Kokasi, a few of them. We have a fleet of vehicles. We'll go and wash them at that car wash. That is stimulating business. That is keeping youth active and busy. It's very small. When you talk of small business, my favorite minister, Stella Ndabeni, should hear this. If they say stimulate all small business, they should, even informal businesses, because informal business is very big in South Africa.
Sure.
Spaza shops are very big in South Africa.
Mm.
You know, I met a lady who is selling food on a caravan, on a street, in a complex next to my office.
Sure.
This lady was telling me she's making between 25 and 30,000 per month on selling plates of food.
Sure.
And for me, that's a lot of money. It's more than the salary of many people.
Yes.
And if government is not investing into such businesses, then we have a challenge.
In fact, speaking of, I'm sorry, I digress. Speaking of food ladies and caravan ladies, there's a CSR project I'm currently building.
Okay.
Where once a month, we want to actually donate a fully kitted out food caravan to some of these our lady who sell from under trees.
Yes.
Yes. So I'm going to be doing this with Cartel Events.
Okay.
Once a month, we'll be fully kitting out a caravan with stove, pots, everything.
Okay.
So we'll give you more details about it and how you can maybe nominate your local food lady.
Where you buy food.
Where you buy food.
Plate for lunch, yes.
Exactly. There's a lot of small businesses like that, but they don't have a structure.
Yeah.
So we're trying to come up with something where we'll design a logo for you. We'll give you a uniform and we'll give you a caravan from which you can operate and sell your food.
That's
the project we're working on. Yeah. So just watch this space.
Yeah, you see, these are your thinking. Yep. You're supposed to be sitting in the Department of Small Business as a director for innovation or something like that.
No.
That's what they should be doing.
I don't agree. I think all of us have a responsibility to help other people better themselves. We can't just wait on government to do it.
What I'm saying is we need minds like that. The minds sitting in government should be thinking along those lines.
Sure. So if you have a capacity to help other people, you need to do that. For instance, there was a 10 billion rand school feeding scheme tender.
Yes.
That's been frozen.
That has been frozen.
By the Department of Basic Education.
And the kids must still eat.
How are you saying to one person, here's 10 billion rand, go feed kids, when you could say, give us 1,000 companies
that will share, yes,
that can do the job and deliver in the different provinces?
Fresh, that's how it's supposed to work. But we know how corruption, maladministration, and looting of state resources, it happens that way, that money is centered into few individuals. That's why the complaint amongst the ANC comrades today is that my comrade Amang Bajile, you know, some other people have heard
it. So we must also eat.
Yeah, so we must also eat. It's our turn. And that delays service delivery. That creates options for corruption and maladministration. Any delayed service delivery for basic things.
I'll never forget a statement I heard from a very highly placed comrade about 16, 17 years ago.
Yeah.
He said there was a saying amongst them that when the music stops, will you have a chair? And yeah. This was 17, 18 years ago.
Yeah. You imagine.
And many would say the music is slowly stopping. Look, and many don't have a chair.
And last week, me and you, we spoke about this, what do you call them, the cartels and the people who are swindling money from other people.
Yeah.
It is because the music has stopped playing.
Yeah.
And people must look at the survival mode at the moment.
Sure. Anyway, so we were talking about Minister Schreiber of Home Affairs, talking about how they plan on bringing 11,000 highly skilled employees to South Africa.
To South Africa, yeah.
And that alone will boost the economy by 1.8%.
Look, I will still have to follow Minister Schreiber's logic behind that. How will it boost the economy? Highly skilled and trained. What skills? You know, the first thing that came to my mind was, what skills are we lacking in this country that we have to import that will boost the economy? Look, I'm going to be very frank and tell you what I'm thinking about Minister Schreiber since he came in at Home Affairs. And we must be very aware of that as a nation.
Yes.
First of all, a good thing happened. They opened the processing of visa for the Chinese and the Indians, BRICS member states.
Yes.
But they are also big trading partners when you look at volumes. Okay. Mm. And I suspect this is being done to create opportunities for Asians and Europeans to come to Africa or to South Africa to settle down. Mm. Remember, Minister Schreiber, whether we like it or not, is still tied, you know, to the DA. And the DA with AfriForum and other people in the Western Cape are pushing for Cape City.
Sure.
Now, the day we go into a referendum, and this is my thinking, Tato, the day Cape City people go into a referendum to go and vote whether Cape Town must be an independent state or the Western Cape and what, they will have enough people who come from abroad who have invested in this country,
yeah,
their monies and their resources. What skills do we have? And why should that be announced by the Minister of Home Affairs? This is what I said earlier on, not the Minister of Labour. Why should it be Home Affairs that determines that we need skilled foreigners who can come and help the country economy to go? Not the Department of Labour, not the Department of Trade and Industry. Why should it be immigration?
Are you saying they should be working hand in hand?
They should be working hand in hand, and it should not be Home Affairs that pronounce on that.
Absolutely.
It should be the Ministry or the Department of Labour.
But the thing is, they would need the visa from Schreiber.
Now, the Department of Home Affairs is an enabling department by providing working or business visas to those people.
Sure.
Not to say we are going to recruit or bring 11,000 people with specialized skills to South Africa. Who is the Minister of Home Affairs who can make that determination? They should actually facilitate and give them work permits or visas or business visas to come to South Africa.
Mm.
And looking at this whole thing, I ask myself, where is the Department of Labor? You know, and in the middle of this, Home Affairs is leading an action of raiding restaurants in Gauteng.
Mm.
Understand? The first
is that a good or a bad thing that restaurants are being raided?
It's a good thing. Okay. It's a good thing that they are enforcing the law. For me, law enforcement, I will never criticize anything on law enforcement.
Okay.
And I like it that they are not targeting illegal foreigners or undocumented, you know, the correct undocumented foreigners working. They also take the manager, the HR manager, and the owner of the restaurant.
Mm.
I want to see the Department of Home Affairs and the Department of Labor, because they are doing this together, doing that in the farms.
Sure.
Let them do it in the farms. I don't, somebody says, yeah, they must start somewhere. It's okay, they've started with Richmond. And you know, how did it start?
Mm.
It was a young South African, something you spoke about in the past. a girl who was employed by a restaurant in Pretoria, and they did not want to compensate her as prescribed by the basic wage.
Sure.
And she made noise about it. She even went on social media, and they started raiding the restaurants in Tshwane. We don't know where we will be the next one, okay? That is a good thing to happen, to make sure that this restaurant or any company, any employer for that matter, employ people with documents, you understand? And that's good. But I want to see the day is done in the farms in the Republic of South Africa. Gayton McKenzie has spoke about to the business community of Stellenbosch in the past. You understand? He was invited to that press club event, and he said, people in the farms, they go and they employ people without knowing their background, which is a risk. I want to see the Department of Labor and the Department of Home Affairs going to raid the farms and check the workers in the farms. Because for me, this whole thing is not even about employment.
Sure.
It is about the abuse of human beings by employers. Let them come and raid our homes fresh. How many of us have South Africans as their domestic servants or helpers or gardeners? How many of us? Does the government have that capacity? I think there's a hullabaloo at the moment. They don't have the capacity to can do that.
But building that capacity is also creating employment, surely.
Yes.
And the one thing, love them or hate them, the Nats had inspectors for everything.
Well, they even the inspected Nats, townships where,
but that's
where,
what I'm saying.
Where, who were supposedly self-governing.
But that's what I'm saying, that the Nats had inspectors and enforcers for everything. Obviously, more often than not, it might have been for their own paranoid reasons.
Yeah.
But you can't have a society where we're not enforcing bylaws, we're not enforcing whatever legislation needs to be enforced. And we can't say we don't have the capacity. Build the capacity.
Build the capacity.
Employ people who can be inspectors in the different sectors.
I mean, when we grew up, I remember the teachers were kept on their toes because in a while, unexpectedly, they will get a notice that the regional inspector is coming to inspect our books.
Yeah.
You know, as children at school, you know, the health facilities, we always had spaza shops, kokasi.
Yeah.
But there were inspectors who will rock in unannounced. I understand that the nation has grown from 40 million in 1994 to 62 million in 2024. So we have had an increase of 20 million people in the last 80 years. I understand that there's a lot of urbanization. A lot of people are moving from rural areas into towns. But as a government, you must have a plan. You must think along those lines. You must think, you know, for the next 10, 20 years. You can't think only for the next 5 years. And this thing of government lagging on inspections, it has actually resulted death. People have died. Children have consumed wrong stuff because there's no inspection and enforcement. Another thing, you know, on this matter that I thought of, have you noticed how foreign nationals who own informal businesses, like the Pakistani shops, the Somali shops, and the Chinese shops, we get it fresh. Everything happens at any time in this country. You go to the Chinese bottle store, it's open at 2 a.m., 3 a.m. When, understand, where is the enforcement there? Honestly, let's know. The other day I was in Polokwane. I needed a drink, it was 3 a.m. and I ran out of drinks. And somebody told me, now there's a Chinese in town. Go to town, you'll find the Chinese at 3 a.m. So where is municipal bylaws? When are they enforced?
And also, you know the way enforcement works, because you don't have to have full capacity. But the minute there's visibility of inspections, word spreads.
And compliance improves.
Compliance improves.
Yeah.
All you need to do is hire 10 guys that are visibly checking on things.
Yeah, if they want to accept bribes.
But you need to remunerate them in such a way that they can't take bribes.
Yeah, but discipline people. Fresh, you know, I started working for government as a clerk. So I was thinking about it last night. And I was looking, you know, I still have my first salary advice. My first salary was 817 rands take home.
Oh, wow.
And I never stole anything from the government. After 27 years in government, and because I grew up from being a clerk to a senior clerk and all that, so it also, we have a responsibility as a nation. You know, we should not say government, police. We have a responsibility. Look at the community forums that have been formed for security. So in all these other things, we also have a responsibility. The bribing and the stealing of passports. You know, the Southern passport is one of the most sought passports in the world. This past week, we got news that There were people within Home Affairs, outside Home Affairs, conniving and working together, selling South African passports. You know what this is going to do?
Mm.
We'll have to change our passports.
Sure.
Now that are existing. So corruption is not only for government officials. I hear people are accusing Home Affairs officials. I can tell you, more than 80-90% of people at Home Affairs are not corrupt.
Sure.
The few rotten potatoes within any government department, whether it's the traffic police or it's Home Affairs officials or anybody who are corrupt, they're actually creating a very bad name and a problem for the government and the society. And that's the challenge we are faced with as a nation.
Absolutely. Now, before we move away from Home Affairs Minister Schreiber, the one visa that I was happy to hear him talk about was the remote work visa.
Yes.
A remote work visa basically is for people who are employed and paid in another country, but they want to stay here longer.
Yes.
Because for me, it means, you know, you're from the US, you're from Poland, you're getting paid in your euros or in your dollars, but you're spending them here.
Yeah.
And we mustn't make it difficult for people to want to come and be based here.
And spend their money here, actually. If you're spending, first of all, it improves on tourism and spending.
Absolutely.
These people will invest. They will rent or buy houses. They will contribute to the economy of the country. And I think it's something in a positive note. You know, I was thinking as Minister Schreiber was announcing all these things, and I asked myself, where have our brains been? Why did they have to take Schreiber to come and, you know, talk of simple things? Online visas. Now they are even employing people at Home Affairs who will process the Chinese visas, and those people are fluent in Mandarin.
Sure.
And I mean, why didn't we think of that all these years? Because then it will be faster. You don't have to send things for translation and all those. Because in the past, we will have to send that into the South African High Commission or embassy in Beijing for translation purposes, or hire a translation company or outsource it. You can translate documents. But the Chinese, they don't play marbles. Everything is written in Mandarin and simple like that.
And there's so much we can do online that we're not doing. I remember traveling to the Seychelles. All of my immigration stuff was done online.
Was done online, yeah.
Everything. So obviously you've got your visa.
Yes.
But you then check yourself into the country online.
Yes.
So by the time you land, everything is self. You help yourself. And before you know it, you're in the country and it's all done.
And
it happens online.
That paper that people fill, we call it the arrival form.
Yes.
Why are you not doing it online? But you know that the going online will also help to curb elements of corruption.
Sure.
If things are done online and there's no human contact, then we can move.
Understand? Yeah, but the unions are going to say, but if there's no human contact, then there's no employment.
Look, Fresh, AI and mechanization and moving on with technology, it's an in thing in the world. In a sense, so we have to continue to improve, but also mechanization for people who studied basic economics.
Yeah.
It does not mean you remove the human element.
Sure.
You upskill them in doing other things.
Oh, yes.
We worked online.
You pivot.
During COVID.
Yeah.
People lose jobs. Yes, people lost businesses and so on. But we could still function without us sitting in the office.
Sure.
And it's how you plan. The planning is very important. We cannot be stuck. Unions, Fresh, are the biggest betrayers of the working class. I'm telling you, I'm one of the persons who says unions have betrayed the working class. Unions have betrayed the people. I mean, unions have been quiet about so many things, and only when they are being implemented, you understand? Unions come and make noise about this thing. I mean, unions start talking now about the... You earlier on mentioned the 25-point basis that the Reserve Bank has. And I saw unions making noise to say the working class is being choked. But the unions are supposed to be form part of the NEDLAC that advises the Reserve Bank, that advises the Treasury in making, you know, monetary decisions for the country. And where are they?
Yeah, but before we go into the 25 basis points, let's just wrap up. The Home Affairs issue. Yakari, you were talking about how, where were these ideas before?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I've realized and noticed since the GNU? So, for instance, there's a lot of things that were happening, for argument's sake, within the ministries and the departments that maybe, please pull your mic towards yourself.
Oh,
yeah. Okay. So there were a lot of things that might have been happening in the departments. But because the DA about PRing everything, There are certain things that the ANC ministers might have been doing, but they were just happening because I'm doing my job.
They never made noise
but
about
the,
them.
But the DA will take the same thing and PR the hell out of it and make it seem like it's their idea. But it was actually a ball rolling already.
The example of what you are saying,
yeah,
is what happened in the ministry, actually. I don't even want to say the department of, sure, of public works.
Yeah.
Remember, the deputy minister of public works used to be the minister.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken,
mm,
he actually uncovered and started the investigation regarding those ghost contracts.
Oh, yes.
And he never went to the media with it. The new minister from the DA came, and he ran with it.
But also, he didn't give specifics. And then the DA minister comes in, and he comes with, I've got the numbers, and I've got this, and I've got charts. Then it seems like he's doing a better job. But it was happening already.
Things were happening. But fresh, another problem, why the government department, and I've said it to some of the ministers who are my friends, you know, I've said to them, the reason why the government was seen not to be doing anything, it is because the GCIS, the Government Communication Agency, is not doing its job. We completed 6 years, right? Six years this country did not have the CEO or the DG of the GCIS. Mm. You understand? The GCIS is not reporting on the good work that the government is doing. There's another problem.
Sure.
And I can even say, report even in the bad work that the government, where the government fails, keep the people informed.
Sure.
Once the nation is informed, then we will not have these things that makes other ministers to look like they are not working or there's nothing happening. We there are some ministries, for instance, the GNU, I've never heard from them. Mm. On a serious note, I've never heard any. I've, to this day, the Minister of Land Affairs, or whatever it's called now, the PAC leader. Mm. I haven't heard anything that they've done in the last 100 days. Mm. Other ministers are all, I don't say they're not doing anything, but we don't see it coming.
Sure.
We don't hear them talking about what they have done.
Sure.
And I think I like what Gayton McKenzie had said. Gayton McKenzie had come up and say, it's 100 days, on the 11th of October, it'll be 100 days in office. And if the president is not happy, the president can fire him. That guy has been all over, right or wrong, he has been all over the media. He's been talking about what he has done.
My man, Gayton was at an event in Sun City last night talking about how I am bringing Formula One back to Kyalami, how I am bringing EFC to South Africa.
Exactly. We are busy
just last night in Sun City.
Yes.
Making promises. In fact, a friend of mine was at the event. And I was like, ish, I hope he delivers on all of these things.
Because it's going to be trouble.
Because he's proclaiming all the time.
Yeah, well, look, giving a fair chance. Look, I think ministers has an opportunity. And I think if they use their budget wisely, then the nation can start seeing the results. Now, the people are saying, okay, I'm a Bahambe now. People are illegal foreigners working in restaurants. You know, I laughed last night. I looked at the television, the news. And one of the spokesperson of Labour was at a restaurant somewhere in Sandton.
Mm.
And you know what they did?
Yeah.
They switched off the lights when the inspectors came. They just switched off the lights, turned everything off. So they couldn't do the actual inspection of what they were there for.
Don't they have cell phone torches?
That's all they have, because they must look into the system.
Mm.
They must look at the number of employees. They must see who's employed. If you switch off the lights, everybody leaves.
Because also, and I mean, I heard this, Bongani Bingwa on Talk Radio 702 was talking about ethical dining on his show this past week.
Okay.
About how, you know, we love talking about how, there must be, higher South Africans, we must be ethical in how we do things. But we're the same people who will go dine at a place that, for instance, doesn't have a South African working there. Or we don't, you know, and what he was basically saying is, are we willing to go that extra mile and say, are you a dining place that operates ethically?
Ethically, yeah.
So is your fish sourced ethically? Are you employing ethically?
That's a tough call.
So when it suits us, we want things to be done according to the law.
Yes.
But if Botsang's food place costs a bit less because Botsang is hiring people under the table, therefore he can afford to charge.
We go and dine there. But that's the kind of a nation we are. We make noise when things are in the public space, and we don't look at our conduct. That's why I earlier said, can any of us who has been saying, Mabahambe, we don't want foreigners, we are not even saying we don't want illegal or undocumented foreigners. Sure. We are saying we don't want foreigners to take jobs here that South Africans can do. I can tell you, majority of the people who go on Twitter, majority of the people who go on social media and make noise about this, they are cleaners, they are gardeners, where they dine, where they eat, where they wash their cars and clothes. Those services are being rendered for by foreigners.
Who are grossly underpaid.
Who are grossly underpaid, or they even charge less. Or they even charge less for the services rendered. And and that's where the challenge is. We have laws that are regulating and governing employment and immigration. And when those laws are being broken to our benefit, we are comfortable with it. And I think as a nation, Bongani is putting it, you know, wisely when he says ethical dining. I never thought of that. That was actually a very interesting discussion.
Absolutely.
To say, will I go to a restaurant that serves only South African produced food and employs only South Africans, and they pay their taxes, and they are, but who's going to go through that responsibility? For me, I'm not against foreigners. I don't care who serves what or who does, as long as people are doing things within the legal parameters.
Work within the laws of
within the laws of country. Yes, exactly.
Absolutely. Checking out some of your comments. We are live. In fact, Makuma's like, oh, wow, it's live. Yes, Makuma, we decided a couple of days ago, guys, let's go live. My team were like, no, we're not ready. I was like, we'll get ready while we're live.
Yeah, I just feel sorry for those who don't tune in at 8 on Saturday morning. They will come.
No, but they'll find it online.
They'll find it online, yeah. But they are going to be surprised that this was live.
Absolutely. Tsegofatso Moatlhodi Omotlhaodi says, I am late, gents. Good morning. It's never too late, Tsego. So thanks for tuning in. Who else is here? It's live. Game-changing moments. This is from KG Koza. Dumisani says, oh, that's why you all took longer to... Yeah, because I think people were waiting at 8.
At 8, yes.
Yeah, also shout out to Dineo Mpala, Zweli, Hle, Mzuli, Tina Lihucho, Bongani Bobo. Thank you for tuning in and thank you for all of your comments. Let's talk about the interest rate cuts.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Look, Fresh, you know, the question has been, do they make a significant impact in the lives of ordinary South Africans? Sure. And 25 basis points, you know, the last time there was another 25 basis points. Let the student of economics in me kick in.
Sure.
When you start talking of the cut of interest rates, you have to compare it or pair it or check it against the inflation rate in the country. You have to check it against the interest rate. You have to check it about the GDP of the country and the economic growth. This cut of 25 basis points, it does not make a significant impact in the lives of ordinary South Africans.
Yes.
What has helped us in the last economic quarter of the Reserve Bank is the fact that the fuel price has dropped you know, twice in the last quarter as well. That's aiding a little bit. But, Fresh, our economy is a capitalist, imperialist-based kind of economy where the markets determine our lives. We don't determine what the market should be doing. So cutting 25 basis points for somebody who has a credit card and who has a car installment and a house bond and many other debts, it doesn't make much of a significant, doesn't make a dent or an impact, especially that the economy is not growing at a pace that it's intended to grow. Yes. I mean, another thing that worries me about the Reserve Bank is that, or the country, you know, generally, they've targeted about 4% economic growth. Why do we put ourselves so low as a nation that we want to grow with 4% when average countries like Brazil, Malaysia, they're targeting 7 to 9%? Are we saying we are not capable of upping the bar? And what is it that is rigging? People were saying load shedding is the one that affected the economy in the country and economic instability. But load shedding is now what? Over 100 days? Over 4 months?
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, in fact, commerce.
We have stopped counting.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're just happy there's electricity.
It is not load shedding. Again, it goes back to employment. We should stimulate the economy. And if our people can start thinking to move away from job creation that we have failed to do, and focus on stimulating the economy and small businesses, I've said before. But I don't think this repo rates that and the inflation and the you know, 25 basis points that Ntatele Sejakanyako comes and make noise about it's making an impact on people's life. people are being choked by debt in the Republic of South Africa. We are a country living on debt. One of my old philosophies is that the so-called black middle class or the middle class people are actually people living on debt. It's people who are, everything is on credit. Your car is on credit. The air you breathe. You know, when I say to people, the air you breathe is on credit, it's because we are sitting in a studio, makeshift studio, or mobile studio, as you call it.
Yes, sir.
And what we are breathing now is produced by the air conditioner. So the air conditioner that's paid by electricity that you are receiving on a debt and you're going to pay the municipality after. So even the air we breathe, we pay for it. Understand? You go to the loo, you flush your poo with water. Understand? The water that you will pay the municipality after using it. So everything is on credit. You buy food on credit, you poo on credit, you wear clothes on credit, you drive a car on credit, your house is on credit. And a nation that is being choked like that, it is going to be very difficult for us to get out of debt. And I think that's one of the things we must instill to our kids, not to have things on debt. Because we look like we are a well-off nation. We look like everything is rosy in South Africa. But again, this is where I want to call on for the people to listen to the EFF when they talk about having a state-owned bank.
Yes.
You know, nationalize the Reserve Bank. Our Reserve Bank is privately owned. It is not serving the interests of the people. It is serving the interests of the capitalist investors and shareholders in the Reserve Bank.
Mm.
It is not serving your interest.
Sure.
We don't have a central bank in South Africa. We don't have a central bank. Our Reserve Bank is not a central bank.
Mm.
And we need a central bank that serves the interests of the people. We need a state-owned bank where the government can bank with that state. Why is the government not having... We are issuing licenses to so many bankers.
Mm.
Every 5 years, there's a new bank coming up. You know, I've learned there's Time Bank these days after the Bitvest Bank was born a few years back. And so why is the government not issuing a license to itself to have a commercial bank so that the government department can bank with a government bank and that bank can aid development of the people, you know, where you can get interest at, loans at a very low interest, where the Ministry of Human Settlements, for example, they've got different categories of houses. They've got low-cost housing, despite the free so-called RDP houses. The low-cost housing, you must still go and take a bond at a very low interest. They still use commercial banks that we have. Imagine if we had a state bank, how much will we save as a nation?
What do you say to people who say, looking at, for instance, a VBS Mutual Bank and how it was looted, pillaged, and treated like someone's saving account, that maybe we can't trust some of us with banks and banking?
Fresh, who is running commercial banks? Is it not some of us?
Mm.
You know, I don't buy that story.
No, but is it the state or is it businesses with shareholders and boards that hold everyone accountable?
Run. State entities like business. The intention of state-owned enterprises, when it was formed, I vividly recall when 1994 came, the first, I think it's the second minister of transport, Meg Maharaj, or the first, I think Dala Omar came after, I can't remember who came. I vividly recall Meg Maharaj when he formed state-owned enterprise of the Department of Transport. There used to be four. Now we are sitting with 13 of them.
Mm.
And he said, why can't we run? You know, I was very young at that time.
Yeah.
Meg Maharaj that time said, why can't we run these things
the
way business runs them?
Absolutely.
We must not delay or avoid to implement good decisions and good plans because there's corrupt elements amongst us.
Mm.
And as a, because it is not to say we are incapable of running state enterprises. It is because there were elements of corruption. We must deal with the corruption element.
Sure.
Then these entities will function. I mean, they functioned before. The apartheid government had Sasol. The apartheid government had Eskom and everything as the post office. You understand? And it is corruption that led these entities to be where they are, not because this country does not have skills and capabilities. And let me tell you, I work for a government entity.
Mm.
They pay so well that our salaries are benchmarked with private institutions. If you look at CEOs of entities, and I must be very careful in saying this, the highest paid CEO of a government entity 10 years back, it was Lekki Montana at Prasa. At the moment, the highest paid CEO of government is the CEO of the Road Traffic Management Corporation.
Mm.
Understand? I mean, those are public figures. I'm not disclosing anything that has to do with my work. And they're being paid well. That's why you find people in boards. the chairperson or a board member of the Road Traffic Management Corporation, it's Advocate Zola Majavu. Mm. I mean, that's a well, you know, a well of advocate, senior counsel and all that. Why would Zola Majavu still want to go and serve a government entity? It's because he's compensated very well. It's because he loves his country. Mm. And also, we can do that. We can, as a nation, have a state-owned bank. Okay, if we say we will run it down, why are we trusting Nesija Kanyako with the South African Reserve Bank? Mm. Why? And the government is a shareholder at the SARB. So we should not be held back as a nation that we can't do things because we have corrupt elements amongst us. I think we must get rid of corrupt elements.
Sure, absolutely.
Jail
so,
them.
So what of cadre deployment in a state-run bank? Would that be applicable or would we need to have different standards?
Well, look, Fresh, cadre deployment must be buried. People must apply for jobs with competencies and qualifications and experience.
And track records.
Track record, experience in doing your job. You know, there's not, experience beats even a degree. You understand? And forget cadre deployment. If you've got cadres within political parties, the nice thing is that, in my view, in my opinion, no political party will ever have absolute majority in a very long time to come. So cadre deployment is going to be very difficult in government and entities and departments from now moving forward. It's going to be a very difficult exercise.
But remember I said a couple of weeks ago that I believe that the GNU could possibly be the best thing to happen to this country in a very long time. And that now that everyone is checking on everyone, and there's almost a healthy competition happening.
Yes.
Maybe that's what this country needed.
I agree with you.
You needed people who feel like I am being watched and I need to be seen to be delivering.
Inspections, observations, following, and competition. It's a healthy competition. These ministers are going to compete. They come from different political parties.
Sure.
The nice thing about them is that even political parties that had one seat, like the PAC, they have a minister now.
Yes.
You look at the Patriotic Alliance, they've got a minister now. But also, government must not focus, or the nation must not focus in deploying ministers. Mm. Ministers are political office bearers. We should deploy people like DGs, DDGs in government, CEOs of parastatals, as competent people who will do the job without being corrupted or thinking of the political party they come from. They must think of the national agenda and the national policy. That's for me, that will take the country forward.
Sure. So we said farewell to former Minister Pravin Gordhan.
Oh, yes, yes.
I think, yeah, like freedom fighter and a half, if you know his history. But obviously, you know, his legacy will leave us divided, depending on which side of the railroad you're coming from. But one thing that caught my attention was how President Ramaphosa spoke of how Minister Gordhan stood like he was a lone figure almost.
Yeah. He actually used the words that a PG, as they call him,
yes,
stood alone.
As a fighter against state capture.
I'm
corruption by political heavyweights.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm very actually disappointed. I don't mind when people praise their peers and fellows and comrades and all that.
Yeah.
But President Ramaphosa at the time, that was a state funeral. Mm. Okay. President Ramaphosa took that podium not only as a comrade to Pravin Gordhan, but as a head of state representing or leading all of us, even if it's misleading, you know. Mm. And to go and utter words like he stood by himself to can fight corruption. You know, the words that the president used, Fresh, were words like he even fought corruption against the most powerful. And I asked myself, who are the most powerful? He is the most powerful person. He was the second most powerful person in the years that were said to be state capture years. He was deputizing Jacob Zuma.
Yeah, in the Shebeen years, he was deputy president.
He was deputy president. So who are the most powerful? President Ramaphosa must come out clear to us. This is the same president that has said to us that the political party he belongs to is the accused number one in corruption in this country. And I was quoting President Ramaphosa. Now his comrades and his fellows are said to be corrupt by him, by courts, by the Zondo Commission. And he stands up and he said Pravin was a lone fighter. So it's President Ramaphosa saying to all of us, all of them were corrupt except Pravin. That's what he's saying. That's how I interpret it. Pravin faced the powerful one. He faced Jacob Zuma. He faced Thabo Mbeki. He faced him, President Ramaphosa. And they are later announced to fight corruption. How is that possible? Why didn't Mr. Pravin Gordhan leave a corrupt ANC and go out and talk? How did he fight it? But again, you know, the nation was very divided regarding Pravin Gordhan. May his soul rest in peace. I've been one of his, you know, what do you call it, victims of being called names, but I don't hold
grudges. Oh, yes. were you not on the same TV show?
Yes, when I was on ANN7 as a resident analyst.
And what did he call you?
a Gupta analyst. You know, and he also didn't only attack me. He also attacked a journalist. I remember Natasha Piri coming back to the studio crying because of utterances that Pravin had said to the ANN7 people. The media was not protected against the minister, but there are other people. You know, a friend of mine, a guy from CAS, he works for South African Airways, he wrote me a message this week, and he said to me, you know, Botsang, how many of us could not put food on the table because of the sale of South African Airways? He was an engineer, a flight engineer.
Sure.
And for that, he was saying very, very hating things about the decisions that Pravin Gordhan had taken and all that. But again, people will say, do not see that we are not talking about Pravin Gordhan here. We're talking about the utterances or the statements that were made by President Ramaphosa. One of the things that catched me was when President Ramaphosa said Pravin Gordhan also was being punished and called names and even racism. There was even racial attacks.
Yes.
Now, for me, as a Pan-Africanist and a subscriber to Black Consciousness, racism is white. And I'm not going to apologize about it. Racism was made and created and inflicted on people of color by white people. So if President Ramaphosa says there was racism against Mr. Pravin Gordhan, who is the person who was racist towards Pravin Gordhan? Was it white people? That many South Africans saw Pravin Gordhan as a blue-eyed boy of white capital. Why would white people who love Pravin Gordhan, they loved him. Remember what happened when President Zuma removed him from office. It was white people who stood up more than us to defend and fight for Pravin Gordhan. So President Ramaphosa must come and tell the nation, who are the people who were racist towards Pravin Gordhan? Because it cannot be black people.
You know what I think it is? And this is not me defending President Ramaphosa. Often we loosely use the word racism when we actually mean maybe racial intolerance or racial hatred.
Okay.
Because I don't think they mean the same thing as racism. Because I believe racism, there must always be a power dynamic.
Yes.
And often it's systematic, this so-called racism.
It's very systematic.
So
yeah.
If I am going to say something racially hurtful to a white person, I don't think it can be called racism. Likewise, if I say the same thing to an Indian person,
okay.
It could be racial hatred or intolerance or whatever else. But because there's no power dynamic, I don't believe it can be racism.
Yeah.
So maybe you used the wrong word. I don't know.
Well, you can even, but again, remember I was saying this to say, he's the head of state.
Yeah.
When he takes the podium, he should be very careful in the words he uses. Because today we are sitting here and asking ourselves, who was racist towards Pravin Gordhan? You understand?
Yeah.
As whether you call him an Indian or as a black person in this country who was part of the liberation struggle. I mean, even President Zuma came up and said, hey, by the way, that man, when I was still in the ANC, he was my comrade. You know, it was so funny that President Zuma said the money he used to can escape the country via Eswatini, he was given that money by Pravin Gordhan.
Yes.
You can see how loyal these people are to each other.
Sure.
And acknowledging the good that a person has done.
Absolutely.
In their times of the liberation struggle. But I think people must stop using funerals and memorial services as platforms to can go and sow divisions in their organization. Because what President Ramaphosa has done actually has demonstrated to me that factionalism inside the ANC still alive.
Sure. Long and the short, does he leave a good legacy or not?
Well, fresh for me, I am 50-50.
I mean, given the number of years that he's been operating?
Look, for
from
that,
school
yes,
to now.
To now. Look,
because we can't just take what happened with state-owned entities
enterprises in
and make that the sum total of his legacy.
Yeah. No. That's one. That's very little, actually. Yeah. It was the end of his career.
Absolutely. I mean, the work he did at SARS alone.
Alone, yes. I mean, 10
many
years
would argue
SARS, yeah.
is his legacy.
Look, the lot of people have said that he has left systems that SARS improved and changed under
Absolutely.
His when he was a commissioner of SARS. But even before that, people who have worked with him from the time he was a university activist within the organization, he became a member of parliament. There's a lot that a man has done.
Sure.
That we cannot only look at the final 5 years of his career in government.
Mm.
And he may not be the person that many liked. He's got his own shortfalls like any other human being, but I think his contribution to the liberation movement as well as to the ruling party, the ANC in particular, and he was
sure.
a member of the South African Communist Party. Mm-hmm. I think he was one of the better deployees from the SACP
Absolutely.
Into the government. Yep. And you know, for me, that's my take.
Checking out your comments, thank you for tuning in. We are live, so please tell your grand, tell your dad, tell your uncle. That Uncle Butsang and Uncle Tato are live on hashtag Politrix. L. Liu says, is it possible to publish the topics a day before so we can prepare and contribute meaningfully? You know, you can contribute meaningfully by simply telling us what's on your mind.
Yeah.
It doesn't exactly. have to be what we want to talk about. Whatever is on your mind from what happened this week in Politrix.
Or matters that they want us to cover.
Absolutely.
That's easier.
So you can actually dictate the direction, L. Don't wait on us. And we are running out of time, by the way.
Okay.
We mustn't think because we're live we can go the whole day, because we'll go the whole day.
Yeah, and actually, in this thing of being live, they're keeping us very busy because we must always go to them and
Absolutely.
Read their comments.
Minister Lamola ends a visit to the U.S.
Yes,
and is optimistic
yes.
as Palestine becomes a member of the U.N.
Yeah, we know that the Minister of International Relations and Cooperation visited the States.
Yeah.
Look, he came back with positive results to say, I think it was also fresh, the purpose of the visit before the U.S. election. It is also to gather the support towards the ICJ.
Oh, yes.
And to make the USA understand South African position towards Israel. They have toned down, America has toned down a little bit, not because of this visit, but I think it was a strategic visit.
I think America are slowly reading the room.
Look, if they don't, they'll be left idly because
yeah.
because the world is shifting. America will be left alone with Israel. And I think this was part of Minister Lamola's visit. But also, I checked how, you know, he was a diplomat. Let me say that. I expected Ronald Lamola, a youth league leader, a rebel and all that, and him moving into that ministry, I lacked the spark that he had when he was at Justice and going to the International Criminal Court or International Court of Justice. He became a diplomat. He was talking to the U.S. as a diplomat, you know, diplomat number one of South Africa. But again, in the middle of all that, he brought up the issue of the U.S. is surprised. Many, they are saying so, Africa can have the two seats they want in the U.N. Assembly, but without veto powers.
Honestly,
really?
Honestly, you can keep the proposal. Yeah,
no, they can keep it.
Because I'm sick and tired of the rest of the world being treated like there are these special nations that can, with one vote...
Yeah.
overturn what the rest of the planet feels is the direction we ought to take.
And that's what happened with COVID.
That is rubbish.
Yeah.
And for me, it goes back to what I've said before on the show, Botsang, that when are we other nations going to stand up and actually say, actually, this is BS. What happens that this special five, is it five of them, that have a veto power?
Veto power, yeah.
It's BS.
No, that's absolutely
because
rubbish.
You're the same people that want to democratize the world. That want to civilize us with democracy. But when the biggest democratic votes happen at the United Nations, you want to say,
they
no,
close the door.
I will be the Idi Amin right now and determine the direction. It's bull.
For me, what...
It's rubbish.
For me, what even irritates me more, Fresh, you are talking about the conduct of those five, you know, members or of the permanent members of the Security Council.
Yes.
For me, what irritates me more is the African Union.
Sure.
Going to this UN and begging like little children, 54 states of Africa, 54 countries, they are asking for 2 seats without powers. Two. Why do we have to ask for two? Why is Africa being treated as a bunch of idiots sitting there? 54 of them will give them 2 seats in the UN Security Council.
Let me tell you why. Because a majority of our leaders are so compromised, they'll never stand together to stand against the status quo.
And
that is the problem.
And it's neo-colonialism.
Exactly. Until our leaders are united and can stand up and say, stand together and say, we're going to stand up against certain things that are part of the status quo, we will never be united.
Yeah.
And we'll continue being the guys with the begging hat.
It is systematic. He's getting
angry. I'm so annoyed.
I'm on the show. Don't be annoyed with me and Trevor. They're doing his job. But again, Fresh, we're even getting more divided. And, you know, let me explain to you and our viewers and followers what is the cause of it. It's neocolonialism. The fact that the so-called independent, and I wrote about it yesterday, so there was never independence in Africa because you were given the independence by the former colonizer with terms and conditions of who will be the head of state, how will you conduct yourself, which currency would you use. That's why our heads of state, as soon as they take power, they run to England to please what? The former colonizers. That's why we still belong to the Commonwealth that was created by Queen Elizabeth. That's why we have situations where countries in the Sahel region are still using the French franc as their currency. And the central bank of some of those countries is sitting in Paris. You know, and the challenge is leaders who don't want to take a position, who don't want to take a stand. And neocolonialism and imperialism are very rife. We still report. Remember before the GNU, what was the biggest story in South Africa? We don't want to upset the markets. Yeah. Whose markets? And that's the challenge. Whose markets? You know what is the market for me? Is that Swanee market that sells vegetables where I buy? Don't tell me about stock markets when African people are poor. We are the richest continent with mineral resources, but the poorest people. Africa is not poor. The Africans are poor. The continent is rich. We are the richest continent, but the people are the poorest because the wealth of this continent, it goes to these countries that are sitting in the United Nations. And now our people, I'm actually irritated more than you by the fact that they go and they ask for 2 seats without veto powers. You understand? And as we speak about this, let me also welcome, you know, the state of Palestine.
Sure.
There's a game changer as well. That during the past week, Palestine was accepted as a permanent member or a full member of the United Nations. After so many years, Fresh, after so many, in the middle of a war by Israel, then Palestine is now a member state. That helps a lot, and I'm very proud of that. Remember, I regard the United Nations and the AU as toothless dogs. They can go and make laws and talk laws, but they can't do anything anyway.
And until you have enough teeth to deal with superpower aggression, you're useless.
Exactly.
And the UN are very notorious for that. When it comes to superpower aggression,
they don't do anything.
They're toothless. I mean, you talk about how in a non-binding finding, Israel's actions have been unlawful.
Unlawful.
But why are you telling us if it's not binding?
And then after you say they're unlawful, what do you do about it?
Exactly. And you're saying that actions since the 60s have been unlawful, but it's a non-binding finding.
Israel has taken over the land of Palestine. They've occupied the land. It's the same way. It's another form of colonialism.
So, for instance, in Lebanon, there have been terror attacks at the hands of Israel. And that's what it is. The fact that you have exploding pagers and walkie-talkies.
And cell phones and
that is terrorism in its most basic form. Because now I can't use my pager without fear of what if it explodes.
Especially some of us who use cell phones that are China-made.
Has anyone from the global north said to Israel, what you're doing is wrong?
They're all quiet about it.
Having terror attacks in Lebanon.
Countries that are producing, you know, electronic equipment like Norway. I was surprised that a country like Norway is quiet and about Israel actually using hand devices and cell phones and whatever, walkie-talkies, two-way radios to can kill people. And the world is silent about it. So this United Nations organization it needs an absolute revamp. It must be absolutely reformed to can be able to can cater for what they exist for, which is peace and security in the world. By the way, the main purpose of the UN to exist, the primary purpose, is peace and security in the world.
Mm.
Have they achieved that since the formation of the UN? No. They've dismally failed. So why are they still existing?
To fight polio. No. My man, we're out of time. I don't know what you want to wrap up with because there's so many
things to talk about. But look, I think let's wrap up with the media, what has happened, you know, in the world. We saw, you know, let's start at home, actually.
Yeah.
Dr. Iqbal Seif, that we are trying to get to this show. Dr. Seif, we hope we are watching. By the way, he watches this show. Eh?
Hello, Dr. Iqbal Seif.
And he issued a statement to say, you know what, we must guard and protect the media.
Sure.
And the media must serve its purpose to inform the people. You understand?
But King Mswati won't King Mswati won't agree with you.
Next door, King Mswati next door. But the Royal Highness goes and threatens to can ban all media houses, all media organizations and formations. In the middle of that, the United States of America goes and lobby people and lobby other countries, including South Africa, by the way, and India, who are BRICS member state, to can ban. Okay, we have banned RT in South Africa. We spoke about it last week.
Although they didn't call it a banning.
Yeah, they didn't call it because it's banning. They've banned RT.
Any other name is a banning.
Yeah. So India, a thumbs up to India as the member states of BRICS, a founding member state. They've actually refused to ban RT, Russia Television, you know, the news channel there. And I think it demonstrates what you were saying earlier on, to say if the U.S. is not careful, they'll be isolated.
Yeah.
If a country like India can stand up and say, we are not banning RT,
sure,
we are going to let any media house who can operate within the boundaries of India and on any platform as fair as possible. And you know why the U.S. wanted RT to be banned?
Yeah.
Because RT has been exposing some of the things that the U.S. is doing worldwide, which is illegal,
yes,
whether it's with NATO in Ukraine or whether it's with Israel and all that. So they want us to be brainwashed and focused on one side of this. So don't be surprised that one day they may actually tell YouTube to ban our platform.
It's not going to happen.
No, we won't allow that. You understand?
So, and we will interview the Russian ambassador soon. We're actually working on that.
Yeah, exactly. By the way. And why would they want to tell people what to listen to, what to watch,
sure,
and which news to read? Mm. I mean, that is actually, what do you call it, sanctioning and suppressing media and freedom of speech.
Mm.
They shouldn't do that. What are they afraid of? If the USA is the so-called world capital of democracy, why would they want the people not to hear the other side of the story? The
so-called bastion of free media.
Yeah, and we exist. We exist. Media platforms exist in this world to can give all sides of the story. The people will decide for themselves which media platform is a better platform to listen to or to follow.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Brother man, we are done. It was our first live edition of hashtag Politrix on Wow What a Week with Botsamudi Mwamimuilwa. We are coming to you live from Dombo Shaba Mobile Studio.
Thanks, brother man. It's been a great experience.
I'm actually glad we did this.
It's rough.
I'm glad we jumped into the water and decided we'll swim as we do what we
need. I can't wait to go and read the comments. And I actually wish the viewers and the followers can actually not only review the topics.
Live.
I was saying the topics. Yeah. What we should be focusing on is also they must tell us if this thing is working or not.
Yes.
What suggestions and improvements. Look, I've been on a live TV, but everybody else does the job. Here, me and you, we do everything. So it's a little bit complicated.
Absolutely.
But yeah, thanks, Brother Fresh. Thank you very much.
But shout out to all of you that tuned into the live edition. Freddie, L, Victor, KJ, Koza, Zwelihle, Dexter, Marcus, Paul, Masikole, Isley, Dumisane, Makumo, Buhle, Oreo, Amushka, Dumisane, Tutuzelo, Tina, Khodisho, and the list goes on and on. Dineo, we see you. Thank you for tuning in and being a part of the first ever live edition of Hashtag Politrix with Botsang Modimwane. Have a great weekend, my brother.
Thank you, brother man.
And we'll do this again. Are we going live again next week?
Ah, well, let's continue.
Because if we go live next week, it means Friday night is a very gentle night.
Yeah, I know. But I actually wanted to ask you, can we do it at 9? 8 o'clock is too early.
So you want to do 9?
9 o'clock, I think it will be fine.
Trevor, are we fine with 9 live as opposed to 8 live?
We can go live. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
We can go live at 10. Then we do 2 hours.
10 until 12?
Yeah. Then we do 2 hours.
Yo.
That's a plan, eh?
Okay, let's talk about it off
air. I think 2 hours is better.
2 hours is better. Then no one is in a hurry.
10 to
but
12.
But we start at 10. 10 until 12.
No, that's fine.
Is that fine?
That's okay.
Oh, yeah. If you'd like to book our mobile studio, email bookings@djfresh.com. We will bring it to you and you can do your podcast and do everything else. And someone else was asking, are we part of the Africa Podcast Network? Yeah, we're still part of the network. Some of the shows will still record at AMP Studios. But Politics, more often than not, will happen in our mobile studio. Thanks for tuning in and wishing you a wow, incredible wow week in spite of yourselves. Shout out to Trevor at Pezulu X for making sure that we look lovely on camera. And Geles Umudisakeng, our executive producer. Till next week, have a great week in spite of yourselves.